There's a thousand pretty women living out there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Katz with a Dish. This is John Katz Lomitas. I write the Katz Report on LasVegasSun.com, and in the Las Vegas Sun print edition, I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group, including The Sunday, our news publication that comes out on The Sunday, except when it comes out on The Saturday.
Oh, sorry, The Saturday. I missed my cue.
I also write for Niche Media's Vegas Magazine and all kinds of other stuff.
Too stuffed from Thanksgiving. I forgot my cue.
You didn't. You didn't pace yourself.
As I'm telling you right now, we may or may not have spent Thanksgiving together.
That's right.
And I will tell you where I was not today. Anywhere near a mall.
No mall.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you an online shopper, Dishy?
You know,
or are you
off hours? I'm not. I'm one of those that just waits until we get a little closer because I can't I am going to do some things online this year, but I can't deal with all of this. Now they're opening Black Friday starting on Thanksgiving. Do we want to live in a country where Thanksgiving is starting the shopping season?
I don't know. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine today who has an app where you shop right from the app and you deliver the gifts right in real time to the person. So you can like, oh, it's Trisha's birthday. I can like dial up something. Let's get her dinner at some, whatever restaurant, Delmonico or whatever, at the Venetian. And it goes right to that person in there. Either in text or in their email or in their Facebook page. It has all these links in it, and it's an automatic gift card that you can send in real time off your phone, off an app.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I was just talking to him. He lives in my building. And we're
I am going
today.
To – there's a couple things I can only do, as I mentioned, so it's not going to be a shock, but that I'm getting a couple people the Team Hope T-shirts where all the money goes to
The t-shirt,
that's going to – all the money goes to homes for veterans. And it's not just like, you know, there's a lot of those TV shows that give people homes and then they end up like can't afford the taxes, can't afford the mortgage, can't afford all that. This is 100% taken care of, tax, mortgage, everything. So it's not like they're going to lose it in a year.
Right.
Which is – and all the proceeds go to that. So I'm ordering a bunch of those. So those are going to be my – you know, a lot of my things. So I am going to be using the internet this year. But usually I'm one of those people that I just like to like go and look and see something and, you know, just get it.
Yeah, it's good that's part of our holiday season is a reminder to do good things.
Yeah, called hopefortheheroes.com is the website. Also, I do have to give a quick shout out. I know I talked about last week, but I was Friday. I was in L.A. last Friday for the Lupus. It's called the Hollywood Lupus Bag Ladies Luncheon. Mm-hmm. And when I mean bag ladies, I mean like celebrities. From everywhere donate their bags and people bid on them. And I mean, some of these things go for a lot of money. I think that it was 20 some thousand for one of the items, which was Fashion Week. You got two seats to a bunch of the top designers in the world for Fashion Week and staying at, you know, I think the one of the top hotels and blah, blah, blah. I mean, these were amazing, amazing gifts. And the host for the evening was Paula Abdul for the day, luncheon. And then Reese Witherspoon presented an award. Her partner in her movie business, her production business, has lupus.
Well.
So she was there, and Bob Guinea, the former Bachelor, did the live auction. I mean, it was just – it raised a lot of money. And my friend Adam Selkowitz – is the president of Lupus LA, and my doctor, Dr. Daniel Wallace, is there. And so I just want to congratulate all them. It was a worthy cause, and I'm thrilled to be a part of the LA Lupus family. And hopefully we can start doing more things for it in Las Vegas.
Yeah, we need to have it be more readily available here in our own city. So on that topic, I went to the Imagine Dragons.
I heard that was
a
cool
charity event. They had launched their Tyler Robinson Foundation for Childhood Cancer, and this is a foundation that they just started about 3 months ago, and goes toward helping families who have been affected by cancer pay their mortgages, pay their bills. It's a very practical, pragmatic organization that cuts out all the bureaucracy and delivers money directly to families for things like groceries to keep their lives in order that often fall by the wayside when they are going through this kind of a tragedy.
Medical bills and
exactly.
You don't have time to do that.
Cash
you have other
hand
kids,
to
you
live.
Have other, yeah, I mean, and, it's like, it's overwhelming,
the
I'm
guys,
sure.
The guys, our friend Rachel Smith, co-emceed the event at the Hard Rock, along with Steve Young. It's good. I met Steve Young for the first time in 22 years. I'd interviewed him 22 years ago when he was at the 49ers. He didn't remember. I sure did.
Oh, and
they raised
the 49ers.
$160,000, I believe. It might even be more than that, that night. It was around that number at the Hard Rock through the live auction, the table selling, the silent auction. And Steve Young bought a golden doodle for $6,000 from the stage. So
that's
it was
awesome.
A very good
and
night.
And it's great and, that hometown, you know, yeah, hometown musicians they're giving back, and it's a wonderful
talk
thing.
About lounge acts, O'Shea's. Imagine Dragons
could
learned
to
play at O'Shea's. And I've got a story about them coming out in Vegas Magazine on the cover in January. And it's going to be a really cool story. I spent the day with them on Friday before the event. So anyway.
So now, see, it's the holiday
happening.
Season. We talked a lot about giving back.
You go to that. That's trf.org is where you find the Tyler Robinson Foundation
great
information. Now, show business. We have up next a very good friend of mine. I've traveled the world with this guy and his family, and we're very good friends. And anybody who knows me knows that. And he's moving from the stratosphere to elsewhere. And he's going to talk about what's going on with his life and his show. His name is Frankie Marino. He'll be up shortly. But first, it's Josh Bell and Movies. So stick around. I know we will.
Hi, I'm Jerry Springer, and you're listening to Cats with a Dish.
Kidnapping.
That's kidnapping.
With one more P it is. That's kidnapping.
You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about kidnapping.
Think about it. Okay, first of all, we kidnap Rex.
That's right.
Right? Yeah. We get money from Bert.
Yeah.
We save the business.
What do you know about executing a kidnapping?
What do you mean?
You get zip ties.
That's Jason Bateman, Charlie Day, and Jason Sudeikis in the comedy sequel Horrible Bosses 2. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. After not actually killing their bosses in the first movie, friends Nick, Kurt, and Dale go into business for themselves. But when they get screwed over by a rich investor, played by Christoph Waltz, they conspire to retaliate by kidnapping his douchebag son, played by Chris Pine. The lazy, tasteless jokes are matched by the haphazard plotting, which recycles several elements from the first movie. Once again, the movie pulls back from having the main characters do anything truly reprehensible, other than subjecting the audience to their vile, unfunny presences. I give Horrible Bosses 2 1.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Penguins of Madagascar, starring the no-nonsense tactical team of penguins who stole scenes in the various Madagascar animated movies.
Brilliant move, Skipper! But now we seem to be outside the play.
I've kind of got caught up in the moment. Well, hindsight's 20/20. Okay, Kowalski, your turn to pick up the slack.
Why don't we catch that plane?
Penguins of Madagascar proves once again that characters who are refreshingly funny in small doses aren't necessarily suited to carrying entire movies. The penguins' madcap adventures fighting an evil octopus bent on revenge, voiced by John Malkovich, are occasionally cute and occasionally clever, but mostly just end up exhausting after 90 minutes. I give Penguins of Madagascar 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and my blog at joshbellhateseverything.com.
There's 1,000 fruiter women living out there. They're all living the devil we care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So hero! Viva Las Vegas!
Welcome back. Sitting with us now is a headliner at the Stratosphere for 10 more shows.
Hey-o!
He's a good friend of mine. Anybody who reads my column knows that. Anybody who knows me knows that.
Come on, looking, you've never seen this show, Cats.
I've
Come
seen
on.
His show more than any show of any type, and probably in entertainment in my life.
Even
anywhere.
More than our show.
I have seen his show
more than
our
we've
own
done
show.
Our show.
I've been present for his show more than I've been present for our show, and that includes
that's
today.
That's saying something.
He's been present to my show more than I've been there.
There you go.
He comes I remember
more. You remember being at your show.
He even comes on our nights off.
There you go.
I hang out there. I go in on Sunday expecting to see
it's
the show,
the
and they're showing
booth.
Me football.
It's the Johnny booth.
Anyway, Frankie Marino, welcome back to the show, my
Thank
brother.
You. Thanks for having
Happy
me.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays.
You know, all that. And let's just get to it. You're counting down the days at the tower.
Yeah, I have actually 11. Tonight 11? Is the 11th show.
So as this airs, it will be 10, though.
10.
Yeah, because it will be, so you'll be burned off the Wednesday night show.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's 10 left.
Everybody will be full and ready to go out.
Ready to go back out and
spooky to get rid of all the Thanksgiving
get rid of the turkey
pounds.
Weight.
Yeah, everyone's getting ready to dance. Now, okay, Frankie.
What's up?
The stratosphere. You've really had an incredible run there.
It's been awesome.
And I mean, and the fact is, we've talked about it with you. We've talked about the show many times that in a entertainment environment like Las Vegas, one of my biggest pet peeves is that anybody can rent a room.
Yeah.
It is, if I have enough, if somebody gives Katz and I enough millions, they can literally. There could be a show with the two of us, and it would be disastrous, but we could still work as long as it's being paid.
It wouldn't be bad as some of the shows in town.
Exactly. Well, that's my point, that it's like if you can kind of buy a room.
That's the truth. We saw one a couple weeks ago.
Oh, boy. And that's if you can pay for a room, you can pretty much have it. And so it was such a wonderful thing that you kind of were one of the first to break the mold to go back to Star Policy, which used to be the norm in Las Vegas
back
in the heyday.
It's very rare.
And that it what means for those people that don't know that is that when the casino actually supports their entertainment and they pay them to perform
they
there,
hire
which is
the
a novel
entertainers
thing.
With the salary,
you actually
like,
pay
instead of
them
the entertainer renting the room.
That's the thing. So we do a lot of touring and traveling, and when every place we play, we go to a venue. They pay us X amount of dollars to be there, and they sell the tickets and make the money. But in Vegas, almost at like 99.9% of the places. They don't pay you anything.
They
just let you use the room. Yeah, four wall. And they let you use the room. And pay. So we weren't doing that. That concept to me was just way too risky. You know what I mean? It's just like I could either come out very good on this or not at all.
Yeah, it is. It's a gamble. It's a genuine gamble. And it's happening everywhere. And
When
you started in August or October of 11. Is that right? 2011?
I think it was November.
November, right in there.
11.
And you were scheduled to, your contract would have ended, timed out, according to time, in October of next year.
I had a two-year deal.
Right.
I had a two-year deal, and 6 months into it, we started winning a bunch of the awards and all that, so they came to me with an extension, an additional 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we signed a four-year deal altogether, which would have ended in November of next
15.
Year, 15.
Right. Okay, it would have been 4 years total.
Yeah. But we just, you know, in the last couple months, just, you know, we've been talking about it and just kind of, you know, they've got another show in there they want to promote, and I've been kind of looking at some things. So we just talked about it and thought, you know, collectively, this would be a good time for both of us to, you know, we had a kick-ass run.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful.
3 years, and you know, it was great. It was good.
Only 599 shows at the end.
I'm
right?
Ending at 599.
It's amazing.
And Katz has been at 600 of them.
Yeah, that's right. Well, which is funny because we always celebrate. You know, we celebrate the 100th, the 200th,
the 500th. I've been at a couple of those.
And now we're at the 599. So it's like it's a weird like, but it
I
ends
think it's
on a
very
Saturday.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we ended right at 600. That'd have been a big celebration, but 599 is kind of that awkward, like.
Yeah, I love it. It's kind of got a like an alternative
edgy.
Coolness, edginess. Exactly.
A little off.
It's very punk rock.
It's December 20th is the last night, right?
December 20th.
And I do, I got to speak to this because I am at Frankie's show a lot. I'm around Frankie's family a lot.
Well, you're friends.
Yeah, we're friends, and we became friends through the time that he was at, you were at
Rush Lounge.
Yeah.
Both Nuggets.
And, you know, people are like, why do you go to that show? Because I like going to the show.
Yeah,
you know, follow my feet if you know what I want to like. And there's very few shows of that caliber, very few five-star shows in Las Vegas. My question now to you is, where do you take it, and what is your magic wand scenario?
Well, I mean, like, everyone's always asked me, you know, the nice thing about, like, why I think you're able to sit through more than one show at our show is because we change all the time. I mean, even like, if we keep the same songs in for a while, whatever, it's kind of chaotic, really. It's kind of you know, just flying by the seat of our pants kind of thing. So you can come. Locals can come a lot to the show. So I definitely want to keep that, you know, in the show wherever we move. And but I just want to take it up a notch. Like the whole point is I don't have a goal of where I want to be. I just want to keep growing.
What is your criteria about what you're going to put on stage? Let's start there. What kind of room, what kind of show do you want to have? You know, like when you sit down and really think about what you want to present at your next place, what is the list of things that have to happen for you?
Well, I mean, we've been honing this show at the Stratosphere for 3 years, like changing it and tweaking it and changing something, like finding what song really hits somebody and going like, well, we can't take that out because it just always makes people cry.
It's a crowd pleaser, yeah.
So you got to kind of leave that. And then when you keep in all these, you know, 13, 14 songs that are all proven to work, you start getting very bored. Mm-hmm. So you got to change the arrangements and stuff, and then you retest them. Now you're using the ones that have been tested and proved, and you tweak them, and you just keep testing. So I think I'll keep a lot of the stuff that people are expecting, kind of have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to add a whole bunch of new elements and maybe even expand the band a little bit. I don't want to do what anybody else is doing. I guess that's the whole key. I don't want anything that resembles anyone else.
Are you going to add different instruments or more?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe add a couple more things or some instruments that come in for a section of the song.
Sitar.
Sitar for sure.
Would be good. Yeah. I'm an accordion.
Big Robbie Shanghar fan. But no, you know, so I mean, it's just, you know, I guess it's just kind of, you have to tailor everything to room. That's one thing I've always done is, when you saw me at the Golden Nugget, I'm not playing the Golden Nugget like it's an arena. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing the Stratosphere like it's a lounge. You treat the room. Yeah. We just played the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't treat that like the Stratosphere. You know, you treat each thing for what it is. And
can I be honest that, and I've said this with a lot of shows, maybe it's just because I like being spoiled. But I, imagine that, me saying that. But I loved the feel at the Palms. Like I mean, granted, obviously with success and everything, you have to grow, you have to expand, and you have to be able to have the big theaters like the Stratosphere. I mean, obviously that was more suited towards people that want to come see you.
Yeah.
But in that, you know, the intimacy of the Palms was just so much fun.
Well,
and you have one of those shows that's very interactive, and it was like, and I loved that intimacy.
Well,
there.
I think I want to bring back more. In fact, I was talking to you about that, John. I want to bring back more of the intimacy into it, even if it's a big room. It could be a 1,000-seat room.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one thing that I'm strong at just from doing it for so long is I can walk out there and kind of read the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And what's hard is when you have a lighting show and staging going on.
It distracts.
You can't.
It can distract.
Yeah,
it's hard to come off the script.
I can't just go like, oh, hey, you know what? You know what they'd love right now? This. Because then the lights aren't set and everything like that.
Yeah.
So what I want to do in my next show is I want to have everything ready to go, but not in an order, so I can walk out and go, this is not the time to do this song. This crowd would be feeling this right now. Because that's one thing I think that's the strongest thing I'm good at is reading the crowd. Like at the Palms, like just kind of see what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, sum up the situation and do what's right for the situation.
And it was fun because it had that feel. Like you'd start something, you'd be like, oh, well, nah, maybe I'll go do this. It was like, but it was such a, it was... And it wasn't that it was like a lounge. Everyone was chit-chatting. Everyone was paying attention to the show. But yet it was like we were just all at a big party and you were there.
That's just an old school way of approaching it. I mean, like all my biggest idols, I mean, from Elvis to Sinatra to all those guys, I mean, it was just a human being up there looking into each person's eye when they sing to them. You're telling a story. So it's just like as we're sitting here, if I was sitting here buried into my coffee cup talking to you guys –
And that's happened before on the show.
But you wouldn't be interested in the conversation. Like if you're at a dinner party and you're talking to people, you leave somebody out, they start getting on their phone or talking to someone else and another conversation starts. If you're going to tell a story, you focus on everybody. And like, you know, when an artist walks on the stage these days and go, how's everybody doing tonight? Let me hear you. And they're looking over the top of the crowd. You know, people cheer because you're supposed to. But when you actually look in people's eyes, you're like, acknowledge that they're there. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah.
How are you doing tonight? You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You suck them in a little bit more. So now what you have to say, they'll at least listen to it a little bit more freely. You know what I mean?
And you've got the tools. And I've seen this thing
happen.
That's
what she said.
That's a good one.
We haven't used that
for a while.
Yeah, it's been like
Probably
a year.
Yeah, I'm bringing that back.
When you and Tony were on.
For the holidays.
Yes, thank you.
Back for the holidays.
The gift that keeps on giving.
That's what she said.
Merry Christmas.
Listen to the Frankie Moreno station on Pandora. But it's as if the show's become more refined and you become more, you know, adaptable to the environment. And in your show at the Stratosphere, it's a lot different than it was at the beginning in the sense that you've built in audience interaction.
Yeah,
dance and with moving the horns around the room and with video. And I wanted to ask you about the role that that Lacey Schwimmer has played in this, especially with the movement on stage and the dance.
The whole deal. She's done.
That's an important part of this. What's going on now?
Yeah, she's done the whole thing. When she first came in and we ended up, you know, she videoed us and we got on Dancing with the Stars with her. I mean, that was amazing. And so when I went and I saw the whole dancing interaction, like I love the idea of dancing the show. And in fact, that may be part of the new show too, more dancing. But I've never put it in my show for one main reason. That's exactly what we were just talking about. A dancer typically learns a routine to a song, this many bars, and then this happens. Like, I typically in the past like to just go take another guitar solo, you know, hey, let me sing that verse again, you know. I want to hit the chorus one more time, or you know what, I'm over the song, stop. And you can't just stop the song and there's a dancer out there with still 12 more bars, you know. I never really built that into the show. So when she came in, I started thinking, like, after doing the Dancing with the Stars and watching that back on television, going like, God, it's fun to watch, you know, the parts like that moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden these guys come in from over here, and then that happens, and these guys come in from over here. So I told Lacey, I said, like, can we do that with my guys? They're not dancers, but I mean, she got Steve-O to dance and Chaz Bono to dance. So it's like, mm-hmm. if you can get those guys to dance, you can get Caleb and Chandler and my, you know, my horn section.
She got Caleb to dance.
I'm like, Steve-O's in your band? And I'm kidding. Those were her celebrities on Dancing with the Stars.
Chaz Bono's not in the band.
Yeah, that's who she danced with on
Dancing with the Stars. Wow, that's awesome. Chaz Bono and Chaz Bono's playing the band.
Chaz Trombono is his new name.
But the point is that...
The point is she got it all...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, take that.
She put it together. We took a song and worked it up like our opening number, and she goes, let's do this, let's have the horns move down for this, and like when the horns come up front, let's have them do this little move. And obviously there aren't dancers, so it's just chill stuff. Mm-hmm. But I looked at that on video and I'm going like, well, that's what I want. That reminds me of the old James Brown shows and Little Richard shows.
Yeah.
You know, Elvis wasn't like that, and Jerry Lee Lewis wasn't like that, or Chuck Berry wasn't like that, but the Little Richards, he's doing his own thing, but he's got the horn section moving in the back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And James Brown's kind of just doing his own thing, whatever he wants to do, but the guys are all choreographed in the back. So we go, let's go that old retro thing. I mean, guys like Justin Timberlake are doing that now, and Bruno Mars.
Well, I remember the Mars especially. Yeah, I remember this happening because we went to see the Mars show at the MGM.
When we saw Mars at MGM, I was so blown away with the concert.
I was
absolutely
blown
away. I don't want to do anything mm-hmm. less than that. I mean,
yeah.
What I do, I've always looked at it as just art. I'm not like, it's not a business. It is because it has to be, but it's just what I do. You know, it's like the paintings I make. And who's better, Picasso or Michelangelo? Art is art. So I've never really competed. I've never even stressed out about what's going on in town, like who am I competing against, who's better, who's... It's just who you like. One guy could blow you away, but doesn't mean that they're going to like him better than you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just do my art. But when I see guys like that, you know, at the top of the game, mm-hmm. and Timberlake was doing it even before Bruno Mars. Bruno Mars took it to more of a 60s retro level.
Yeah. It's like watching the OJs with that guy or
yeah,
something.
When you watch it and you look at that, like, that's what's happening. So I don't know what's happening over at this casino or in that lounge or in that showroom, but that's what's happening when someone from North Dakota comes into Vegas. They don't know the competition between the Vegas acts. They just know what's happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Timberlake and Mars and all those guys are happening.
Right.
So it's like, well, we just need to stay up with what's happening, you know? And the music's already there in that degree. So it was trying to get that visual aspect, which I've never thought about. When we started the show, I told the guys to wear, everywhere we wear black. Just wear black so we're in uniform, you know? And just horns stand over there. And then it evolved after we did a couple lucky TV spots for Hallmark Channel and stuff. We look back, we're like, yeah, looks like we're all going to a corporate gig. Like, let's spice up the outfits a little bit. And that's when Lacey comes in.